Let's turn to 2 Samuel and chapter 14. And we are attempting to take chapter 14, 15 and 16 together under the title Absalom Schemes and Rebels Against His Father. And obviously his father is King David. But you need to understand that this is a sequential thing. And it's not only sequential, but it's consequential. What do I mean? One thing follows another. In sequence. Just as number one is before number two. Two follows one. So also what Absalom does follows what happened earlier. And it's consequential. It's cause and effect. The failure of David. Remember? Which chapter was that? In 2 Samuel and chapter 11. He sinned with Bathsheba. And then he repented. The Lord forgave, restored him. But there was a consequence and a sequential thing that happened with Amnon sinning against Tamar, his half-sister, Absalom's full sister. Consequence, Absalom becomes a schemer. David's own son, whom he loved very much, and you will see how much he loved Absalom, goes against his own father, the king. And he rebels against his father. So first of all, in the first 24 verses, there are more than 24 verses in chapter 14, we have Joab scheming to bring Absalom back. The last time we left 2 Samuel in chapter 13, we saw that in avenging Tamar, his sister, Absalom murdered Amnon after he hatched a plot to do that. And then he was banished by his own fleeing in verse 39, 38 and 39 of the previous verse. Maybe we should read from verse 37, chapter 13 of 2 Samuel. Now Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, the king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom had fled and gone to Geshur and was there 3 years. Can you imagine 365 days multiplied by three? That is how many? Almost, it's over 1,000 days. Every day. He's not just crying, he's mourning. Every day for his son. Verse 39, the heart of David longed to go out to Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, since Amnon was dead. There are always consequences. Even after forgiveness, there are consequences. You can't escape consequences. You can get bitter about consequences. You can have an ungodly attitude to consequences. It's ungodly when a believer repents of his sin, is forgiven, but fails to understand that consequences cannot be removed. And you've got to live with it. And it's a great thing to think of what David said in Psalm 51. My sin is ever before me. I live in the consciousness that I'm a fallen being. I was bad, real bad. My sin was terrible. Jesus saved me from being very bad. And if it wasn't for Jesus, I would still be very bad. Do you realize that? But Jesus saved me by forgiving me when I repented by His grace and believed His gospel. But even though He has forgiven me and cleansed me, there are consequences. And I must have a godly submission to God as I face life with the consequences of my past. So Joab schemes to bring Absalom back. In the first three verses, he hatches a schemes, a plan. It says, Joab perceived that the king's heart was inclined toward Absalom. I hope you follow Joab's history. He had seen what David had done with Bathsheba, right? He had seen what David had done with Uriah, right? Because he was the commander of the armies. He knew it all. And now he knows. He understands. There's always somebody in your circle who knows you, who'll catch you, who might take advantage of you. Nothing is really hidden. Nothing is really secret. Somebody might find out. Be aware. Even that itself is a good fear, you know, that someone might be watching, unbeknown to me. I have to tell you this. I was coming out maybe 30 years ago out of a movie theater in Mumbai, Bombay those days. Who would know me in Bombay? And it was an okay movie. I wasn't doing anything bad, but I came out of this. I think it was in Colaba. And as I came out, someone said, "Hi, Chris." I was in Madras. What's that? Scripture Union Center, Mahabalipuram. And Ashok Charles and Phil Johnson and all of us, we were there in a conference of Grace to India. And Ashok said, "I want to treat you to dinner." And so we went into the area of the sea, and it was dark, to a restaurant by the shore in Madras. And in this dim lighted restaurant by the ocean, we're walking around. And suddenly someone says, "Hi, Chris." Phil Johnson and I were in Hyderabad waiting for a train to get back to Pune after another conference. All different events. And we were hungry, so we went to a restaurant in a hotel, and no one opens a restaurant till 7 o'clock, right? So we were just sitting in the lobby. And we had to go and catch our train, so we decided to exit out of the hotel to go to Begumpet railway station to get our train back to Pune. And then walk a bunch of kids. And one of the young girls, out of the blue, says, "Hello, Uncle Chris. I know from experience, there may be always somebody who recognizes me. I can't do something in secret." Did you realize that? You can't hide. Someone may find you. Joab knew, and he could understand the heart of King David. And so he, verse 2 says, chapter 14 of 2 Samuel, sent to Tekoa, brought a wise woman from there and told her to pretend to be a mourner for her own son and make up a story. And he tells her what story to make up. You can read for yourself. Do not anoint yourself with oil. Look miserable and go in front of the king and speak to him this made up story. See, that's a scheme. The scheme in action, verses 4 to 7. The woman goes, spoke to the king, verse 4. She prostrated herself and said, "Oh, help me, O king." I mean, she was a wise woman, but she must have been an Oscar winner, huh? She really won David's sympathy, as you can see. And king said, "What's your trouble?" Verse 5. "Oh, I'm a widow. My husband is dead. I had two sons," verse 6. "One hit the other and killed him." Verse 7. "The whole family has risen against your maidservant to demand that I hand over the remaining son. And now they want to punish him and kill him. And I will be left with nobody. I'm already a widow. One son kills another son. Now the rest of the family want to kill the second son. This is a made up story." But it works. As you can see from verses 8 to 17. King says, "Go, I will give you orders," from verse 8. And the woman says, no, wait a minute. The story is not over. I don't want you to get into trouble by you helping me. That's verse 9. But the king says, "No. If anything happens, you just bring him to me. No one will trouble you anymore." Verse 10, and she says, no. And there's this conversation. And David assures her that no more harm will come to her or her son. And the woman keeps on talking with the king. And in the whole conversation, what emerges is that the woman is able to twist the whole thing back to say, "David, you are guilty. Why have you banished Absalom?" David sees through the plan of Joab and this woman's drama. And verse 18 to 20, he says, "Please do not hide anything from me." You see that in verse 18. Verse 19, "Is it Joab who put you up to this?" And the woman admits to that. Verse 21 to 24, the king calls Joab and says to him, "Go bring back the young man, Absalom." I mean, did David want it? Absolutely. You go back to chapter 13 and you know that every day for 3 years he longed for his son and he mourned for his son. So Joab's scheme was in keeping with David's longing. It matched. And so David recalls his son. But you see now, when David recalls his son, verse 24, the king said, "Let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face." He's still banished. That's the story so far. Act 2. Absalom schemes to get the kingdom. This is all a matter of scheming. Joab schemes, now Absalom schemes. And that's how life is with so many of us, right? I mean, even in your place of work, in your families, and in the society, in the housing society, wherever you go, isn't there a lot of manipulating, scheming? Everyone's playing one upmanship against another. The Bible is so relevant. What is Absalom's scheme? It's a scheme to get the kingdom, to snatch the kingdom from his own father, to oust his father, to get rid of his father, the king. And he doesn't really care. And you can see it as the story emerges. Verses 25 to 28, Absalom decks himself up. He knows he's a looker. Beware if you know you are pretty. Beware if you know you are handsome. I mean, it's okay for others to say, hey, you're a looker. But when it goes to your head, beware. No harm in being nice looking. No harm. And you should look after your appearance and your posture and the way you hold yourself up, the way you dress. You should be dignified, though modest. But look at Absalom. No one was as handsome as Absalom, so highly praised, from sole of his foot to the crown of his head. There was no defect in him. Wow. I mean, this is a cool dude, eh? Hunk. Everybody loved him. He cut his hair, and it weighed 200 shekels by the king's weight. Every time he had a haircut. And he had a haircut only when he thought it was too long. I mean, you think you are stylish. I mean, you don't stand a chance with Absalom there. And he had three sons, one daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of beautiful appearance. So he's there, he decked himself. Oh, look at me. Look at my hair, style and everything. Huh? Every part of me is beautiful. Not only does he deck himself up, but now he demands. He doesn't request. He snatches it. He demands reconciliation. Have you met people like that? I mean, they've done the mischief and they demand reconciliation, directly or indirectly. Do you meet people like that? It's demanding, it's expecting, it's thinking that they're doing you a favor. And some of us buy into that kind of thing because we get into a guilt trip. I told you the Bible is very relevant. Verses 29 to 33. What is happening here? He lived 2 full years in Jerusalem. So now it's 5 years, right? 3 years far away, 2 years close, and yet not close to David. He did not see the king's face. And then he sends for Joab. See, he sends for Joab. That's a summons. I've been summoned by Christians. You have to come and meet. And then I've been humiliated to say sorry. I'm sending for you. Come here. Okay. It's all right to be humiliated. But it doesn't work. A spiritual work never never becomes a spiritual reconciliation. As you will see here. Not only does he send for Joab, he sends him to the king. Joab doesn't come. See, Joab is a schemer too. Second time, he sent for him. Joab doesn't come. That's all in verse 29. But look what happens. So Absalom says to his servants, you see Joab's field over there? Go burn it up. Okay, we'll make him come to heel. You know how you treat a dog? Have you worked with a dog? To heel, to heel. You train a dog to be at your heel. You obey me. I'll burn the fields of Joab. So they did that. And Joab came. See, why did you set my field on fire? Absalom, verse 32, he says, because I told you to come and you didn't. Why did you bring me from Geshur? Just to sit here and rot? You know, that's his conversation. I want to see the king's face. And if there's anything wrong with me, any iniquity in me, let him put me to death. This is very spiritual conversation, huh? On at face value. If I'm guilty, kill me. Have you heard people talk like that? Never listen to them. I mean, if you're guilty, what should you do? You shouldn't ask people, kill me. You should say what? If I'm guilty, Lord, convict me. Help me to really repent. You know, this word if is used very often by believers, one to another, when we say sorry to one another. Have you heard people say, you know, if I have hurt you, I'm sorry. Huh? You don't know for sure. If I have hurt you, they make it, they say similar things in speeches, you know, all over the place. You know, the conclusion of big speeches is, if I've done anything wrong, please forgive me. You know, farewell addresses also. If, I mean, you're not sure. Verse 33. So, when Joab came to the king and told him, he called for Absalom. You have to wonder about David. He's so tender. That's a question. He's so soft. That's a question. He's so naive. That's a question. I don't know what he is. He's so much in love with his son. He's blind. He can't see. Prostrates himself. Verse 33, I'm still there. Absalom prostrates himself. David kisses Absalom. Is it wrong for a father to love his son? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But something is missing if you are undiscerning, right? Something is wrong if you forget your total responsibility. Because David, you're not just a dad. You're also the king, right? And you have a kingdom for which you are accountable to God and to the people whom God has called you to serve. You have to hold on to the big picture and not melt with just partial responsibility as a dad, as a parent. We move on to chapter 15, but we are still on the second point, Absalom scheming to get the kingdom and snatch it away from his dad, King David. Verses 1 to 6 of chapter 15. He's got what he wanted so far, right? I mean, David has kissed him. David has shown the whole world that I've accepted my son back. What does this son go and do? The floodgates of rebellion have opened up to Absalom. He gets himself a chariot, horses, 50 men as runners before him. You look at this text. I mean, he's on the job now. I mean, he's strategically placed himself. He's got advantage. Checkmate. No? David. Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. And when any man had a suit, a case, to come to the king for judgment, look at him. He's standing exactly where people come to see the king with their complaints and their needs. And he gets up early, maybe earlier than David. And he asked them, which city are you from? He would say, your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, I'm in verse 3 of chapter 15. See, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you on the part of the king. Can you see what he's doing? He's poisoning the minds of the people against the king. And it's all very subtle. It's easy to get poisoned when you listen to all the whispering around you, to get prejudiced. Moreover, Absalom would say, verse 4, oh, that one would appoint me judge in the land. Then every man who has any suit or cause could come to me and I would give him justice. Please don't think this is one conversation. This is over a period of time. Bit by bit, little by little, he is taking over the handing of favors to people, telling them, hey, you know, there's something wrong with the administration of this whole kingdom. This whole organization, something is missing. The leader doesn't care. The king doesn't care. I mean, there's not even someone there. See, the king, but I am there. If only they would appoint me. We can apply it in our own situations. How we can come in the way and start diverting the whole processes. And lead to a whole lot of breakdown. In fact, in verse 5, he would even prostrate himself, put his hand and take hold of the needy person and kiss them. I really love you. I really care for you. There were ministry partners who would keep saying that, you know. And then some others would say, but you never say you love us. You never give us anything. The others do it. There's always comparisons. In this manner, verse 6, Absalom dealt with all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole away, underline that. So Absalom stole away the hearts of the men of Israel. That's not all. Verses 7 to 13. Having done that, he usurps the kingdom. Not only the power, but the kingdom. Now it came about at the end of 40 years that Absalom said to the king, David, what are you doing, David? 40 years you allowed Absalom full privilege to settle himself in and take over and stab you in the back, nice and clean. 40 years. Can you imagine? Verses 1 to 6 is a process of 40 years. Someone who's a son, who's that close, can be that devious. But it's subtle, isn't it? And it can happen to anybody, any institution. It keeps happening. At the end of 40 years, he tells his dad, please let me go and pay my vow. My goodness, this is insidious. Let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed to the Lord in Hebron. And remember, Hebron was the holy place. Where did the big praying? In those days. And your servant has vowed a vow while I was living in Jeshur in Aram, saying, if the Lord has indeed going to bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said, go in peace. And so he rose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout the land. I'm in verse 10. All the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom is king at Hebron. What placement? What positioning? But what blindness of a man in leadership. Then 200 men went with Absalom from Jerusalem, who were invited and went innocently. Can you imagine that? Look at that. 200 men accompanied Absalom innocently. They didn't know the scheme. See? They had been bought over to trust Absalom and to think he is a good and righteous son. They did not know anything. You know, it can happen that people can be absolutely unawares. And when it happens, they are forced to take sides. Innocently, they can take the wrong side. That's a tragedy. It happened right here. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city Gilo, while he was offering the sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong. Do you hear the words? We don't like to use that word, right? Conspiracy. But it's no less than a conspiracy. was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. What was happening to David? He was losing. David was losing, and he didn't even know that. It's over. It's gone. It's finished. David lost everything. And David runs for his life. That's the third part. If this message is opening up some scabs, ask God to give you strength. Because we have to face reality. I have huge scabs. There's a lot of pain, right? A lot of hurt. But David is a great encouragement because he doesn't allow the defeat by Absalom to defeat him spiritually. See the man of God. David surrenders to God while on the run. Chapter 15, verse 14 to the end of chapter 16. Look at 14 to 23. David is fleeing. A messenger comes, verse 13 of chapter 15, to David saying, the hearts of the men are of Israel are with Absalom. I mean, the whole nation is gone. And David said to all his servants, get up, let's run. In such a time, the only solution is get out. Don't sit there. Get out of it. And so he says, arise and let us flee, for otherwise none of us will escape from Absalom. Go in haste, or he will overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. Not only I, but us, and not only us, but the whole city will be burned down. You know why? Because Absalom is bad. He has no scruples. Are you getting it? David wakes up. He knows Absalom has become what? An enemy. But he still loves Absalom. And you'll see it. Not yet, but you'll see that David never stopped loving Absalom. And all the faithful people tell David, verse 15, behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king chooses. So the king went out and all his household with him, but the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. The king went out, verse 17, and all the people with him, and they stopped at the last house. Then all his servants passed on beside him, all the Cherethites, all the Pelethites. Isn't there a football player, Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men who had come with him from Gath, passed on before the king. And then the king said to Ittai, the Gittite, why will you also go with us? I'm reading a lot of verses now and will comment on this. Look at David's heart and attitude. He's telling this man, why are you going? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile. Return to your own place. You came only yesterday, and shall I today make you wander with us? While I go where I will, return and take back your brother's mercy and truth be with you. I don't want you to suffer. You stay here. Absalom won't touch you. You're a foreigner. You just came recently. Stay here. Your whole family. I don't know where I'm going. I'm just running, escaping. wherever I can. Why should you suffer? What a man. See, you see him wake up to becoming a responsible, godly, spiritual leader in a time of crisis. But Ittai, what a man Ittai was. This is loyalty, and that's what we need so much. Loyalty. Loyalty. Ittai says to the king, as the Lord lives and as my Lord the king lives, that is both God and you, O king. Surely wherever my Lord the king may be, whether for death or for life, there also your servant will be. Underline that and make that your commitment to loyalty. To loyalty. We need loyalty. There's too many people who are just there. And one little thing must happen to make you question the leadership. We need loyalty. Therefore, David said to Ittai, go and pass over. Welcome. Verse 23, while all the country was weeping with a loud voice, all the people passed over. Can you imagine how much pain there was in this group? I mean, did you go through pain? Or are you still throwing stones at DCC while you're still here? Critical? Or is there loyalty? The king also passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. David flees Jerusalem with a weeping group of people, badly bruised and battered. Verses 24 to 29 shows David fears God and knows that God is his trust to help him return. You know why? Tell me why David can trust God. And as I pause and give you time, let me tell you that David never forgot that God is a covenant-keeping God. What had David been told by God about the kingdom? And how did David become king? Even while Saul was still king. And David had that perspective without knowing the full details that this kingdom was not his kingdom. But it was God's kingdom, and he was God's servant, appointed by God to serve God and his people, God's people. And one day this kingdom would be the throne of Messiah. So I'll return. Right now I'm finished. But I'll return. And see, verses 24 to 29. Now behold, Zadok also came, and all the Levites with him, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. Now please understand that the Ark of the Covenant of God in Israel in those days represented the presence of God. And within the Ark were the Ten Commandments and the showbread. You can find that in the Pentateuch. And the Ark had to be carried in a distinctly holy way. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar came up until all the people had finished passing from the city. So the king says to Zadok, return the ark of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his, that is God's habitation. Look at that carefully. If I find favor with the Lord, this is grace. If God's grace is upon me, then he will bring me back to the ark and God's dwelling place, Jerusalem, the city of God. Verse 26, but if God should say thus, I have no delight in you, behold, here I am, let God do to me as seems good to him. Isn't that total surrender to the will of God? Absalom is not the issue. I am under the mighty hand and purposes and will of God. And if I've got a crushing defeat in my kingdom and my kingdom has been snatched away from me, it is God who's allowed it. And if God favors me, then God will bring me back, but the ark of God must remain here. Verse 27 onwards, the king also said to Zadok, further, and you've got to take this in as well, the priest, Zadok is the priest, are you not a seer? You know what a seer means? A seer is a prophet. And the word prophet is equivalent to the word seer. Take out the R and you really understand what a prophet does. He sees. What does he see? He sees God in history. He sees God with insight. He understands how God works. That's what a prophet does. He sees. He's a seer of God's purpose and will. Zadok, verse 27, are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace and your two sons with you, your son Ahimaaz and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I am going to wait at the fords of the wilderness until word comes from you to inform me. Therefore, Zadok and Abiathar returned the ark of God to Jerusalem and remained there. This is not scheming. This is not manipulation. This is understanding the ways of God and doing exactly what God is pleased with. Return the ark. It should remain in Jerusalem. This is the place of God's habitation. And if God brings me back, let him do it. But Zadok the priest and your sons, your key people who see God's will, and you will keep me informed somehow, and so you remain, David placed them where they should be. In a crisis, David is sharp. Sharp in what? Not his wisdom, but in understanding how God works and what pleases God. And there's no deviation. So the priest, the seer, the prophet, the Levites, the ark of God remain in Jerusalem. And they will be the informants somehow to bring the message back to David about the purposes of God, how God works it all out. What happens next? David worships God as he plans his return further. Look at verses 30 to 37. David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went. This is humility. This is penitence. And this is worship. And wept as he went, and his head was covered, and he walked barefoot. Then all the people who were with him, each covered his head and went up weeping as they went. Now someone told David, saying, Hophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. Go back to chapter 15 and verse 12. Absalom sent for Ahitophel, the Gilonite. And so David is told about that. And David said nothing to the messenger, but to the Lord he said, "O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahitophel foolishness." I mean, can you understand David's leadership? He gets a hold of God and he says, "Okay, he's got my counselor, Ahitophel." God confuses Ahitophel so that he gives wrong counsel to Absalom. Zadok, you stay. Ark, you stay. Ahitophel, God, deal with Ahitophel. And it happened as David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped. Do you see it? That behold, now this is another one. This is good. Hushai, the Archite, met him with his coat torn and dust on his head. Hushai had fled. And David said to him, "If you pass over with me, then you will be a burden to me." See, another placement. Strategic leadership by David. "But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I will be your servant, O king, and as I have been your father's servant in time past, so I will be now your servant,' then you can thwart the counsel of Ahithophel for me." So he sends Hushai back to Absalom to pretend to be Absalom's friend and to be a betrayer of David. And he tells him, verse 35, "Are not Zadok and Abiathar the priests there with you? So it shall be that whatever you hear from the king's house, you shall report to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, their two sons are with them." And he names those two sons, "And by them you shall send me everything that you hear." So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city and Absalom came into Jerusalem. David's got it all organized now. Under control. As he worships the Lord, his focus is on the Lord, he gets wisdom to plan his return. And he's got a spy in Absalom's camp. He's got holy men who will report what God is doing in bringing confusion through Ahithophel, for whom he's prayed that God will confuse him and make his counsel foolishness. And then finally in chapter 16, what happens? You have to go back as we open chapter 16, the first four verses, to 2 Samuel chapter 9 and see how David had been faithful to his friend Jonathan. Remember? Jonathan and David were knit together. Jonathan died and David found out Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son, and saved him and brought him to his stable and started looking after Mephibosheth. That's chapter 9 of 2 Samuel. Chapter 16, the first four verses, Mephibosheth turns traitor to David. And Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, the first four verses of chapter 16. Beyond the summit, comes, meets him with a couple of saddle donkeys, 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, a jug of wine. If you study that amount of food, you will see that that is nutrition for an army that is on the move. And Ziba says, "This is for you and your household." Then the king says, and where is your master's son? Where is Mephibosheth? And Ziba says, behold, he's staying in Jerusalem. Because Mephibosheth is saying, verse 3, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me. I, Mephibosheth, will be king. See, ambition. David is finished. I know where the butter is. Let me go with the good group. And I might get the kingdom. You know what David does? He says, verse 4, Ziba, everything that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours. So Ziba, the slave servant of Mephibosheth, becomes a wealthy man. Mephibosheth, even while David is running, becomes a nobody. The continual dependence on the Lord by David, as a man called Shimei, chapter 16, 4, 5 to 14, starts cursing David. David comes to Bahurim, and there's this man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He comes out cursing continually as he came. He threw stones at David. You've got to follow this story. This is bad. I mean, he's giving him curses and he's stoning David. And what is he saying? Verse 7, get out, you man of bloodshed, you worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. Worthless man. Get out, David. And Abishai, verse 9, says to the king, why should this dead dog curse you? Let me go and kill him. And the king says, and hear his words. And see the godliness of this man who depends solely on God. Verse 10. What have I to do with you, O son of Zeruiah? If he curses, and if the Lord has told him, curse David, then who shall say, why have you done so? Then David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son who came out of me seeks my life. How much more this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day. And so David and his men went on, and Shimei went along parallel with David, cursing him all the way. I mean, don't you want to be like David? It doesn't matter. Let them stone me, let them spit on me, let them speak behind my back, let them speak to my face and curse me. It's okay. God's allowed it. So be it. One day, this curse will turn into a blessing. That's backbone. That's spiritual. That's godliness in the face of losing everything. What happens to Hushai? Verses 15 to 19. Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, entered Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And now it came about when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king. Long live the king. See, he's pretending. He's been nurtured by David. And he's loyal to David. And he does exactly what David told him to do. And Absalom says to Hushai, is this your loyalty to your friend David, my father? Why did you not go with your friend? Then Hushai said to Absalom, no. For whom the Lord, this people, and all the men of Israel have chosen, his I will be, and with him I will remain. Besides whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in your father's presence, so I will be in your presence. Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, and this is interesting. As Absalom finally strengthens himself as king instead of David. Give your advice. What shall we do? Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines. Remember the 10 concubines that David had left? That will be the final insult to your father. You've taken his kingdom, you've taken his family, you've taken everything, and you take his concubines as well. And Ahithophel's, verse 23, advice became the advice that Absalom began to listen to. The stage is set. And next week we will look at how that stage that is set by Absalom's scheming and deviousness collapses by the will of God. Our Father, we thank you so much for taking us through even this section of Holy Scripture to help us to see how we do not need to panic and fear and scheme, manipulate, react, retaliate. But like your servant David, just surrender our lives to you in your will, your purposes, which are excellent. And to you belongs all the praise and all the glory. Amen.